welcome to Inspired Island, where every episode we sit down with someone living an inspired life here on Vashon Island in Puget Sound. From world-class artists and musicians to chefs and business owners, our little rural island has it all. I'm your host, Grace McCray, a new full-time Vashon Island resident, and thank you for joining me on this journey to discover why Vashon is such an inspired island. Welcome back to Inspired Island. Eva Papp, a psychologist, consultant, clinical, and field researcher, is in the studio. Welcome, Eva.
Hi, Grace.
Eva's an innovative thinker in the areas of authenticity and well-being, and she's also added author to her resume with the recent publication of her book, Chasing the Wild Authentic, A Field Guide to the Boundaries, Practices, and North Star of Living Your Truth, which I'm currently in the middle of. So, Eva, I'd love to ground our conversation with the book. Could you talk about the premise of the book and who it's for?
Well, the book is really for everyone, although I did have in the back of my mind to create a system or framework that psychology adjacent clinicians could use with their patients. There's so many people who indirectly work with clients that don't really have a grounding in psychology that could use a few skills and strategies to share. And so that was also in the back of my mind when I wrote this. And it really is a culmination of my 25 years as a psychotherapist. And, you know, you get to the end of that long path and you're like, I've learned so much here and I've had such amazing experiences and I've learned something that I'd like to share with others. And then crafting, well, how can I do that? I closed my practice 7 years ago to figure out that way. And this is the way.
Excellent. And could you talk about what authenticity means to you? I think in the book, you talk about active authenticity, which I think is like an interesting way to think about it. Would you mind explaining a little bit more about that?
Sure. I talk about how when people think about authenticity, and typically in popular culture, people refer to it as that thing that you're feeling most intensely, which is your truth in the moment. And one of the things I talk about is moment to moment, what's true for us can change. And based on our feelings, if that were the only guide. And so there must be a deeper understanding, a more authentic authenticity, if you will. And so I wrote this book to give people the tools to actually get in touch with that deeper part of themselves that encompasses what they're feeling, that includes what they think, and includes the information that they get from their body, what I call like a 360 knowing. And then again, it's like we're not just in this moment. We come with a history, right? And we have desires for the future, which is what I call the 180 of authenticity from the past to the future. And so it's really about how do I take all that data and how do I allow it to shape my understanding of what's true for me in this moment so I can act in the most authentic way possible, right? And for me, authenticity is really experienced and developed as one acts because it's an acting that you get the information that actually allows you to refine your understanding of who you are over time. So it's a process and it's an action.
As somebody who appreciates really tangible advice and examples to bring concepts to life, I thought your book so far has been doing a great job of specifying how you know whether you're moving towards being more authentic or away from your authentic self. And could you share, you touched upon this, but a little bit more about the data inputs. You talk about your feelings, your bodily sensations, and your thoughts. Are those the three?
Yeah, your emotions, your thoughts, and your bodily sensations. And they pretty much encompass everything, all of our experience. But then once you understand that, see, that's just the one layer, right? Because once you understand that, then you have to look at what that experience is all about, right? Because sometimes what we feel deeply is a holdover from something that may have happened to us, but may not be a reflection of us. And so there's a discernment piece that has to happen there. So in part of the book, once you kind of understand this three-way, what I call three-channel perception, right? So we understand our experience. And you also have to bring this kind of a historical perspective to that understanding. And what if this is from the past and what is really not me, but an experience I had, and learning how to shed that and differentiate. So there's it's a truing process is what I call it. So there are many levels to this, which is why it's a book and a framework. It's not flip off the hip. But the thing is, once if you follow this pathway, it really does begin to shed what is not you and what has been on you, whether through culture or family or religion or traditions or whatever it is that we've been subjected or trauma experiences, right? We start to identify with some of these things, but they may not be actually consistent with who we truly are. So the book really and the path that it lays out is a path of shedding all the stories to be freely and truly who we are. And that really is the first part of the book, is to get like clear. And then we go on to, okay, now that I know who I am, how to express who I am, how to protect who I am, and then how to live the most vibrant version of who I am. And that's the framework of the book.
Right. And thinking about the reason why you wrote this book and sort of why it's needed in the world right now, do you think we have an authenticity problem? Are there obstacles to authenticity that you've been seeing in your work?
Well, absolutely. I mean, in my book launch talk that I gave a month or so ago, I talked about the fact that authenticity was Webster's word of the year, meaning it was in 2023, the most searched word of the year, meaning that people didn't know what it meant to be who they really were. And they're going to Webster's to figure it out. So I think that speaks just volumes about where we are as a culture and people's hunger to get back to a more authentic relationship with themselves. Because from that really comes more authentic relating to others, more authentic relating to our work in the world. And I actually think that that becomes then a landscape from which we as a culture can step forward in a truer way to really serve the culture and the real needs of the people in the culture. But if we are so detached from who we are, then we're going to have educational policies and all kind of policies that actually don't serve who we are as people. Mm-hmm. So getting back to who we are is important on many levels for the individual, for sure. But again, also to serve the culture and to steer us in a better way, in a better path.
Yeah, that was one of my questions coming into this conversation was whether or not finding your more authentic self and following that, it obviously benefits you, and I think we can all imagine what the benefits would be, but how it benefits others in your circle, how does it benefit others in the world for you to be coming from an authentic place?
Well, I think it's actually useful to talk about how it benefits us individually, because we think, oh yeah, it can't help but be useful to be who you are. But in truth, when you really understand who you are and you work from those parameters, there becomes to have an ease in one's life because you're not overextending. You find where your authentic boundaries are. And when you learn to live within them, you are not only honoring who you are, but you're being more truthful in your relationship with others, more quickly able to see when a relationship doesn't serve you or then, you know, doesn't serve the other person either. And it becomes a North Star to a more fulfilled and satisfied and pleasurable life. So those are really important pieces of how being authentic serves oneself. But when you show up truthfully, so for instance, like maybe what's true for me is this particular kind of a profession. And maybe nobody else is happy about it, but it really serves me. And I start doing it because I care deeply about it. It matters to me. Well, there is a qualitative difference, and I'm sure you've experienced this. When you're working with someone who has a deep satisfaction in the work that they do, there can be an abundance that comes from that, a generosity, a goodness, a competence, a capability that when people are just doing it, you know, to punch out on the clock, it's a completely different level of service. And so when people really operate from their authentic truth, the quality of the engagement is just, you know, completely different. And people feel it, and it creates a benefit to all of society.
I think, I mean, as you're speaking right now, a lot of Inspired Island guests that we've had on previously come to mind as of speaking from that place. It brings an air of confidence, yes, and ease, and not having to prove themselves necessarily the time. Yeah,
that's right. And the thing is, there's some people, by virtue of who they are, that acting from their authentic self, almost they can't help it, right? But it's not so clear to how to do that if it's not natural for you, or if you've been in an environment where you haven't had your authenticity encouraged. And so the skills of how to do this have lost, have been lost, and people don't know how to do it, which is why I wrote the book. It's real tangible, concrete steps on how to really do this thing.
Yes. And would you say, asking for a friend, if somebody has a bit of a people-pleasing through line in their life that's getting better, but might, you know, definitely still there in times, do those folks struggle a little bit more with that authenticity?
Well, you know something, it touches me to hear you say that, because that is an issue for a lot of people. And I have to say, really a lot of women as well. And I have a whole section on that when I talk about boundaries, and I talk about a yes boundary, that yes is in fact, or a boundary is in fact a boundary, and how people use their yes to serve others and not use yes to serve themselves, and how important it is to learn how to make a definitive no to others so you can say a yes to yourself. And people pleasing really is about turning that yes, that sacred yes, that is your yes, to serve others when it's meant to serve yourself. That doesn't mean serving yourself can't serve others as well. And in fact, one of the prescriptions of active authenticity is that yes is always meant to serve who you are primarily. And then you learn how to move from a yes to yourself to also learn how to serve others. But it comes from always saying yes to yourself first. We have to say yes to ourselves. That's our job. That's why we're here, is to bring our unique brilliance to the world, however it looks. And if we're not saying a yes to ourselves primarily, we are not fulfilling our reason to be here. And not experiencing the joy and the satisfaction that comes from living that type of life. And again, it's not saying no to other people. It's just saying yes to yourself first. And your yes to others always incorporating a yes to yourself. So that's a part of the two that's in the boundary section.
I could imagine that maybe a sweet spot is finding kind of the center of the Venn diagram of things that serve yourself and serve others or the world.
Well, it's a little bit more complicated than that. I invite you to get to that chapter in the book. I think it's chapter 8.
Okay.
It really is serving yourself.
Yeah.
It really is. And if you are living an authentic life, serving yourself will mean, in addition, serving those that you care about, because that's serving yourself. So it's really, it's just the starting point changes how we perceive what is in our world, and then how to interact with that. And so it's a new way of thinking about things.
And in terms of writing the book, it's a big undertaking, especially a book and a framework this large. When did the idea first come to you to actually sit down and start it?
Well, it's interesting. It was a bit of a process. I closed my practice, like I said, about 7 years ago, because I knew a next thing was coming and I didn't know what it was. And I tried different things, and I started writing, because I'd always had a blog, but I started realizing that there was a through line to the blog. And so I put that down in a curriculum, and I developed a curriculum, and I taught a couple of rounds of it online. And then I was doing a one-day workshop, and one of my students said to me, Eva, you really need to put this stuff in a book, because that way because they had done the online workshop with me, and then they came to an in-person, and they said, I learned so much more having already had the basics in place. And I thought, you know, that's right. And that was about 3 years ago. And I was like, okay, I'm going to write a book. Oh my gosh. It was an incredible undertaking. People say, you know, why did you write a book? And I think really the question is, why did you finish writing the book? Because it is so hard to bring it to a conclusion that you have to be really motivated. And for me, the passion was conveying something that I felt was needed and could really help.
Mm. And did you have an editor or other people involved in the process with you?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a self-published book, but I had a lot of editors involved. I first had a developmental editor in the early stages who talked about the overall structure of the book. And then in the middle, I had a copy editor who looked and, you know, they give you feedback because what happens when you are immersed in such a deep project, you stop being able to see it. Mm. You know, there's a way you can't really see what's going on at some point. Mm. So that was helpful. In the end, I had a proofreader who went through and made sure that my commas were in the right place and things of that nature.
Yeah. And do you think you learned more about yourself in the process of writing this?
Well, you know, this is for another conversation, but this process of writing felt like a collaborative process. I have done some research in Siberia. I've done some research in the Peruvian Amazon, all as part of being a psychotherapist and really trying to understand well-being and mental health outside of a Western paradigm. And the book was written from this perspective that I got working in Peru in collaboration, I like to say, with an indigenous healer there. So we agreed to work together. We didn't know what that would mean. And I came to realize that me writing this book was a sort of bringing forward of some of these ideologies. So, yeah, so I feel like that was going on in the writing of the book. And so the book wasn't, I was discovering the book as I was writing it a lot of times. And I didn't even know where it was going sometimes. And I would be losing my mind because I'm like, there's this Gordian knot here. I can't figure out how this is going to dangle. And, you know, I would just keep working at it. And then I would see it. Oh, now I get what this is supposed to be. And then, of course, I'd have to go back and rewrite all these different sections and keeping what I discovered. So it was a real journey for me as well. Not linear, but very cyclical.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's fascinating. And my last question that has to do with the book before we love to dive into the people behind the work is, so for folks who, like me, might just be inundated with daily life. You know, there's young children to take care of. There's busy jobs. And it seems like sometimes it's hard to take the time for reflection. Do you have any advice to folks? And I'm guessing picking up the book could be one and starting to explore and familiarize yourself with some of these concepts. But do you have any tangible like tips for people who just feel like they're so busy that they have problems quieting things to tap into themselves?
Yeah, I think that is not an uncommon situation that people find themselves in today. It's overwhelming. It's really a decision to devote some time, and I would say every day, to learning to listen. And it doesn't have to be a time out of time where I like sit in the corner and am still for 10 minutes. It could be while you're doing the dishes. Okay, I'm going to stop thinking about the thousand things I'm thinking about, and I'm just going to tap into my body right now. Like, am I frenetic internally? Am I at peace? What is my mind saying to me? Am I worrying about things? What am I worrying about? What's happening with my emotions? You know, am I upset about something? And it's throughout the day, like going for a run. Well, maybe don't listen to music for 10 minutes of your run and instead check in. You know, what's my body saying? You know, what is my real experience here? What am I worried about? And there's no judgment. It's learning to listen, because the more we listen to ourselves, the more our body and our mind and our emotions start to give us information. They're always giving us information, but then we begin to hear it. And sometimes what it's telling, one of those channels is telling us maybe the very thing that we need to hear to understand a situation that we're in and how to move through.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just starting to committing to listen to yourself a little bit every day. It really doesn't have to be an add-on. I say in the book, you know, when you're brushing your teeth, check in, practice.
Mm, that's really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And Eva, I'd love to learn a little bit more about your backstory. I mean, these concepts are just so important and weighty and have to do with just the human experience. So I'd love to know a little bit more about your human experience. Where did you grow up? As a child, did you have any passions that you might see reflected in what you do today, either professionally or outside of your profession?
Mm-hmm. You nailed it when you said the human experience. And ever since I was little, I was keenly interested in the human experience, observing, trying to understand. You know, when I graduated college, I majored in psychology and philosophy because I was really interested in the big questions. I remember moving into New York City in my 20s because I just wanted experience. And everything for me was about new experiences, putting myself in situations where I would be exposed to things. And I'm quite kind of a risk-taking personality.
Mm.
I had a little motorcycle. I used to ride around. I used to go on these crazy expeditions. I would work for, you know, a period of time in a job and save money and quit. And then I would just go traveling until my money ran out. And then I would pick another job and just do it for a while and save money and then go on another expedition. And I just was keenly interested in the art, in everything. I just wanted to learn life and people.
Mm.
So I wasn't really sure what I wanted to study, and it was making me kind of crazy because, you know, I spent my 20s doing this, right? And I'm like, okay, it's time for me now to be a little bit more focused. And what I realized is the thing that I was always reading about on my own time was self-help books, psychology. I mean, it's just something I just couldn't get enough of. And I'm like, wow, if I made a career in this, like, I'll be a really happy person. And so that's how I decided to go into psychology. And it's been the most fantastic career for me. I've loved my clients. I've loved my work. It's just, I love the puzzle piece that each client is when they come in and unraveling it together. It's been a wonderful career. Yeah. So that interest in human nature. And again, I was very, even in my graduate school studies, I was like, you know, psychology really comes from a Western type of thinking, Freud, you know, Jung, the beginning of it, and then it emerged from there. But, you know, cultures have been dealing with their mental health for aeons before that and in different ways. And so while I was in graduate school, I went to Siberia with the intent of studying shamanism and it's looking at its relevance for 20th century at the time, psychotherapy, and also looking at psychology in context. And what does that mean? What stays the same context to context and what changes? And therefore, what is the essential psychology? And it was very profound. And being in Russia, it was in the 97 when, you know, the Soviet was falling apart and all the things were coming back together. And, you know, I've got crazy stories of traveling with the mafia because I went by myself. See, this is the adventure thing, right? So I went by myself. I didn't know Tuvin, which is where I was going to Tuva. I didn't know Russian. So I landed there by myself and, you know, I got to Trans-Siberian, but I couldn't get there. And so these mafia people took me in, bumped me to the head of the line, which is not really fair, but that's how they do. And then I ended up where I was going and it was an insane experience, but I, you know, learned a tremendous amount and I had a lot of fun.
Wow.
And so that started my researches in indigenous mental health. And, you know, I did a lot of those studies and when I was doing my internship, I did it at Asian referral services. And I did a bunch of places where I could continue studying multicultural counseling. And in fact, when I first started and went out on my own, I worked as a clinician for a group of Russian doctors in Bellevue. And I treated people from all around the world because they pulled in a lot of Microsoft clients. So I had, you know, clients from everywhere in the world. And it was fantastic.
Wow. And so you are not practicing psychotherapy on an individual basis right now, are you?
No. I mean, I keep my license active in case that should ever change, but I'm not. My work now is teaching and it's teaching this model. Because one of the things that I've always has been on my heart is not everybody can afford therapy and find good therapy. But people need real help.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to create a system, which this is, that is deep, but doesn't require therapeutic support so that people can heal using these tools. It's what I call an outside-in healing versus an inside-out, which is a lot of psychology is inside-out. You go back, you know, work through stuff, and then you move forward, which is fantastic, right? But if you can't afford that, or as an adjunct to that, well, what are some of the tools that you can use in your life so that you're living your life and moving your life forward while you're healing? Mm-hmm. And that's what this model is for. It's how do you move forward and heal as you go?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when did Vashon Island come into the picture for you?
Right. Well, we've lived in Seattle, my wife and I, for a number of years, 20 some odd years. And it was really looking for a middle school for our son that we thought would be really cool.
Mm.
And then, of course, we saw Harbor School. We're like, we should move to Vashon Island.
Wow.
And the idea was just to rent for a year because we're both from big cities. I'm from New York. She's from Detroit. And we're like, oh, my God, we're going to lose our minds on a little island. Let's just rent first. But then this perfect house came along and we're like, just let's buy it. So that's how we ended up here. And we've been here almost 10 years. This August will be 10 years. And of course, their son now is in college.
Wow, that's so cool. I hope Harper School knows that they're the reason that you moved here. That's really cool.
Oh, they do.
And here on Inspired Island, and you mean I'm on a quest through this show on Voice of Vashon to kind of uncover the people that make Vashon kind of the eclectic, interesting place it is. Do you think Vashon Island is a place where maybe authenticity is a little bit more cherished than some other societies, especially in this country?
I think we have a large proportion of artists and people who are trying to live close to the earth. And so they're thinking, they are sensing and feeling, and that naturally brings you closer to being in touch with your authentic self. So I think probably yes, based on those things.
Yeah, very interesting. Because I think there's some overlap with inspiration and authenticity, I think, right? Like true inspiration where you find that could maybe be an important feedback on are you moving closer to your authentic self or not?
Mm-hmm. I talk about that in the book. I don't call it inspiration. I talk about aliveness. And then aliveness is the end goal of an authentic life. Is to be the most alive, vibrant person that you can be, because that's where joy lies, not only for you, but for others. And I think inspiration is a part of it, right? Yeah. Our vision, our dreams, the things that motivate us, that's all in the last half.
Yeah, very cool. And on that note, what is inspiring you these days?
Well, you know, it's interesting, but the book was such a heavy lift and it was such a guiding light for me for so long that I'm like tired. I'm moving out into the world to start teaching it. And when I engage in a classroom or in a workshop and I'm working with people, I get really, it's another level experience for me. It's almost like being a psychotherapist again and the joy I would feel with working with clients and watching them just like blow things up, right? In a good way. So there's tremendous joy in that for me. And I'm finding my way toward that now being what I do because I really relish spending a lot of time in this thinking, feeling, understanding place. You know, there's a quietness that is required, that type of life. And I'm now figuring out, well, how do I balance all the things and move forward in the teaching in a way that truly is inspiring for me? So I'm figuring that out right now.
Yeah. And do you have any favorite hobbies or things that fill up your cup when you're like, I have to stay, get out of my mind a little bit. And there's, you know, these teachings, obviously you embody them and your passion is just palpable for this topic. But do you have anything, you know, are you involved in any art or anything outside of this work that really gets you going?
Well, I think getting back into dirt and a very physical, grounded way of moving through space. Because when you're thinking all the time, it's very in the ether, you know, and the dirt and looking at beauty in plants and trees, it's a balancing point for me. And of course, anything to do with my son is a joy.
That's excellent. And do you have any events or things on the horizon that people should be looking out for?
Well, I am doing a full day workshop on boundaries in relationship and how to take things to the next level in terms of ease and enjoyment and satisfaction. And that will be on at O Space. Oh my gosh, their space upstairs is so gorgeous. These big windowed rooms. We'll start the morning with a little qigong to get everybody into the feeling space, and then we'll do this day-long workshop. So that will be on March 30th, Sunday, and you can register for it. It's a donation-only workshop, and you can register at my website, which is wildauthentic.com/events will be the event tab, and that should give you information on how to sign up. And it's limited because it's a workshop, so we dig in, and we don't just talk the stuff. We actually go in and see where everybody is with things and then get clarity and work on moving forward on different areas of what is going on with boundaries and all the rest of it. And so I limit it to 18 people. So if you're interested, definitely take a look and register sooner than later.
Excellent. Well, Eva, we love to end every show with a fun lightning round of questions just to get to know you better. Are you game?
Oh, I am so game.
Excellent. Well, the first question is, do you have a favorite beverage on Vashon?
I do. And I wrote it down because there's a lot of words to it. It's Timber City's ginger beer because it comes in an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic variety. And also it's seasonal.
Oh.
And they have the most insane flavors. It's just amazing stuff.
And where do you find that?
You could get it at Thriftway and also at the Pop Shop.
Perfect. And if you're not at home or work, where can people most often find you on the island? Do you have any favorite haunts?
Wingahaven Park.
Ooh, good one. I think we've had
that. I love that place with the, if you go down to the water, there's this really pristine view of Mount Rainier and it feels like a private beach. It's beautiful there.
That's a good one. And do you have any pet peeves about island living?
I would say living on an island. Peeve, but also a great joy.
And do you have a favorite Vashon Island tradition?
Well, I'll tell you, I have a favorite scramble, which is every year I try to get in my native plants order at the land trust because, you know, we have the little window where you can order those plants and I often miss it. So that is my yearly tradition of trying to get my plants ordered in time.
Excellent. And last, we already touched upon this, but it doesn't hurt to go over it again. Where can people find you to learn more about you and your work?
Well, I did mention the website, wildauthentic.com, but also from the website, you can get to my Substack page, and that's a free offering. But it's also where I really go and I dig deeper on some of these concepts and really pull them apart because it can be a little bit complicated sometimes or can feel that way. And so I thought it would be really awesome to give people a place where they can go and get things teased out. So
excellent.
That's available.
That's excellent. Thank you so much. And we'll link to all of that in the show notes. And thank you so much for joining us today, Eva. This has been great.
Thank you, Grace.
And thank you for listening. Again, this is Inspired Island on KVSH LP Vashon. Until next time, stay inspired.